Welcome to Pretend I Know Nothing About. I'm Katie White, your host, administrator of COAAA. Today's episode is part one of two about Medicaid. We'll learn from Michelle and Shelby, our Medicaid specialists at COAAA, about initial eligibility, redetermination, and the checks and balances that they offer consumers in our area. Let's get into it. Well, welcome. Today we've got with us Michelle Rice and Shelby Fox, some of our fabulous Medicaid specialists, and we are going to be talking about all things Medicaid. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I always like to start off by just kind of getting to know both of you. So Michelle, let's start with you. Tell us about your role and kind of, you know, how you came to COAAA.
I came to COAAA 24 years ago. I actually, prior to that, was a home health aide scheduler and scheduled passport and senior options waiver services with American Nursing Care. And one day I was out on a home visit and Jan Roberts, who's no longer here, was out and she's like, oh, we need you. And so they reached out to me and I provided my resume and then I was hired and been here ever since. I started out doing passport and traditional waiver services as a Medicaid specialist. And then in 2014, when we went to MyCare, I switched over to Molina MyCare.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. I like that story. Shelby, how are you?
Hi. I started here 6 years ago. Prior to that, I was at Jobs and Family Services in Franklin County, in Cuyahoga County for the 14 years. That is my Medicaid background.
Okay.
And I worked directly with Michelle and Addie and Galena. And when there was an opening, I said, I'm coming. So, and I work with MyCare, Aetna.
Okay.
Waiver.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You know, oftentimes we talk about 6 years is a long time to be somewhere, except if it's COAAA because people are here for so much longer. It's like, okay, I'm coming up on my 2 year and I feel like, all right, I'm coming along. And then 24 years, 35 years. So it's a great place to work. I love that people stay. So Medicaid was started in 1965 like Medicare, but Medicaid is the state-funded program that offers health coverage for low-income people. And we do a lot with Medicaid here. So tell me a little bit more about that. What is Medicaid? When did it start? And that kind of thing. So Michelle, do you want to kick us off with that?
Sure. Medicaid is a program that allows people to receive help that can't afford appointment, you know, like doctor's appointments or waiver services and everything. So I think it really, it's different in every state.
Okay.
The state of Ohio, every county, there's 88 counties and they all have Medicaid. And so it allows people, you know, to apply. If their income is low, if it's SSI, that means that they automatically are eligible for Medicaid.
Okay.
There are income limits for people if they are on waiver that allows them to either have a liability or not have a liability. And when we say that, it is if their income's over $1,869, they will have a liability for waiver services.
Okay, so Medicaid is offered across the U.S., but each state has a different Medicaid program.
Correct.
So we have the Ohio Department of Medicaid. And to be eligible for Medicaid, is it just a financial eligibility, that $1,869 per month, or are there other criteria for eligibility?
For the waiver program, we would have resource eligibility as well.
Okay.
It would be under $2,000 for a single person. They cannot have resources over $2,000.
Does that include house savings, all of that?
Savings, checking, IRAs, CDs, bonds. Yes. All of that combined.
Okay.
The house, as long as they're living in it, that is not counted as a resource.
Okay.
However, if they would go into like a facility, then their house would be considered a resource. So there's ways that they can talk to JFS, learn different ways to that they could settle that, and most of the time it comes down to selling
okay.
and then using the financial assets from the sale of the house to possibly pay private until they're eligible for Medicaid again.
Okay. And then there's a look back period as well, right? So you could transfer some assets to other people, but it has to be at least
five years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 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 So Medicaid is an insurance program. The eligibility is really based on financial criteria. And then you are saying sometimes people have a liability. What is a liability?
A liability is for waiver consumers, and it's mainly for the waiver, is if their income is over the 1869, what they do is they take the income minus that, and that tells them how much they have to pay per month for waiver services. Now, some ways around that is, let's say, for an example, someone only has an ERS system. And so they would only have to pay for that ERS system because you can't pay for services that are less than what your liability amount is.
Okay. So for waiver services, you don't necessarily just have to meet that financial criteria, but you will likely have a liability, which is essentially your portion that you pay the difference. So if you weren't on a waiver program, if your passport or I don't know if you get questions from across the agency, is that 1869 really the line in the sand?
That's only for waiver.
The 1869 is only for waiver?
Yes.
Oh.
Because if someone is on community Medicaid, their income can't be over the SSI amount.
And what is the SSI amount?
941.
Oh, my.
And so how it used to be, unfortunately, is if people were, if their income was over that amount, and for community Medicaid, they used to have to spend down and make their income less by their services and stuff. And so they made everything change to where it's one flat number, and anything over that, they have a liability. And if they're not on a waiver program and they're just like out in the community, if their income is over the SSI standard of 941, then they do not qualify for Medicaid.
And so what happens if they don't qualify for Medicaid? Say they're at 952.
They would have to go on to the portal and see what is available out in the community, what other insurance is available out in the community.
Yeah, they'd have to go to the www.gov.com site to see what other services or what other programs are out there for them for their insurances.
Okay. And do they work with the County Job and Family Services on that type? No.
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 Okay. So they're just, if they don't qualify and they need the community Medicaid, then you just have to kind of go out there and see right. what's available.
It would be just like anybody trying to pick up insurance for themselves.
Okay.
So they have to do the research and figure out what they could afford.
Okay.
So kind of like Obamacare was, that's pretty much what they would have to go out and view those options and figure out if they could afford something that would best fit their needs.
Okay. But that would be someone who's 64 or younger, correct? Because when you're 65, as we learned from Andy Haggard, then you're getting on Medicare.
Right, but it's different for Medicaid because it's all income-based, not age-based.
Right, 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 right. Okay. And then, so we're talking a lot about waiver, especially since you're from Aetna and Molina. And waiver individuals are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid.
Right. What that means is that they're dual eligible.
Okay.
And when someone becomes dual eligible, then they're eligible for the MyCare program. And there's only certain counties at this moment in Ohio that are MyCare-based counties that everyone can be switched from, you know, from the waiver to the MyCare.
Okay. And that's changing in January of 2026. We'll have MyCare across the state. So we are, as area agencies on aging, gearing up, talking to each other, advocating, training, and trying to make sure that some of the area agencies on aging that have never had MyCare, that we're helping them prepare, and then preparing ourselves because only a few of our counties are in it. And then soon enough, all of them will be in it. So a lot of preparation going into that.
Yes. And another thing with Medicaid, we've been talking about the income and everything. And if someone's income is over $2,829, they have to do what's called a QIT to be able to pass the income test to be on waiver. And what that means is that if their income is over that amount, they have to go to a bank and set up a qualified income trust, which we know as a QIT. And what they have to do is they take their income and they'll minus that amount. And then the extra that's there, that's what has to go into the QIT each month. And then what they're allowed to do is take that money from the QIT, pull it out to pay on their liability, because if their income's that high, then they're going to have a liability.
Right.
And if they don't use all that money within that month, it has to stay there because the state is the beneficiary of that QIT.
So that QIT could be growing as long as someone is receiving those services. And then when they die, the state
comes in and takes that part back. That's how the state gets paid back some of the monies that they have been putting out for someone to receive services.
Okay. Interesting. I did not know that. So then in keeping just a little bit longer in this, and then we'll talk about, you know, what it looks like on a daily basis in your roles. So if someone has a liability, who is sending that bill or where's the check going? What does that look like? What's that process?
If somebody has a liability and if they're in Passport, then the COAAA would be billing the individual monthly for their liability.
Okay.
If when they come to MyCare, if they were previously on Passport to MyCare, then COAAA would still be billing them their invoice.
Okay.
If they came from another program besides Passport, then they are billed by the provider that's providing the most expensive service for them. Through like Molina or Aetna. That is the difference. So if COAAA is collecting the liability, then they would get that invoice from them and then they would pay COAAA.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And so if they're paying if they're on waiver and they're paying a waiver program, then they're paying directly to like their home health agency or whoever their most expensive service is?
Correct.
Okay. It's a very complicated system.
It is. Yes. But it's fun at the same time because there's challenges every day that we get to deal with.
I love that phrasing. Okay, so tell me about a challenge.
Well, I just wanted to say, like, everybody has the mindset that Medicaid or the state takes their house. And that is so not correct.
Okay. Please do explain that, because you're right. That is a common thought out there.
It's so common, and they don't take anybody's house. What happens is if the house is sold, then obviously then they're going to private pay until those funds are down. If you've been on Medicaid for a long time, the state can put a lien against your house. They're not ever going to come in and swoop your house up and sell it or take it from you. But what they would do is they could put like their services against the house. So when the house is sold, they could recoup a little money from the sale of the house.
Okay.
However, Medicaid, the state is the last person to get any payment. So if there is any other person out there that is owed money by this person, they're going to get paid first.
Okay.
Medicaid is going to be the last person to get any funds. So honestly, we can probably say they're not really recouping too much.
Okay.
There's also a homestead exemption act, which I think is really important for people to know. If you're somebody that is on waiver and you have a daughter or a son that's been living with you, taking care of you, and they're literally living at your residence, mm-hmm. they don't have a different residence. Their mail's coming there. Everything about them is in your home. And the reason that they're there is to take care of you and help you. And a doctor can fill out paperwork and say, because they lived with you all this time and took care of you, and it's a minimum of 2 years, then that kept you from going into an assisted living facility or a nursing home facility. There is paperwork that can be filled out. It's called a Homestead Exemption Act, and that paperwork will have to go to Jobs and Family Services.
Okay.
They then would turn around and send that paperwork to COAAA, where the assessors would look at it and view and see if you meant the criteria of being with a level of care and during that time. And if you did, the house can be quick deeded and transferred over to the child okay. that was living with you. And it's not a ding against you with Medicaid.
Okay.
It won't count as you transferring your resources to that child. So therefore, if that's a situation that somebody is living with, then that's a great way to end up giving that child and loved one the house that doesn't affect your Medicaid, that goes into their name. Now they're responsible for it, and Medicaid cannot touch that house any longer. Okay. But if that happens, it's very, very important that you get to the courthouse and you get that deed done, because if that person would pass away prior to that deed being transferred, it's null and void.
Okay.
So it's very important, like if you know you're in this situation, you want to get this taken care of. And it's
and so
important.
It's 2 years. If they've been mm-hmm. living there, it's their primary residence, they're caring for their mm-hmm. parent for 2 years, mm-hmm. then you go through this process and you want to try to get on it quickly.
Yes. And there's like doctor paperwork that we there's a packet we give.
Okay.
And doctors have to fill it out, because doctors have to back it up that, yes, this person would have not been able to be by themselves.
Yes.
Without the help of their loved one. And then, of course, COAAA does the level of care mm-hmm. for that period of time. And it's just a program that's out there that I don't think is spoken enough about, because it is important, especially if you have a child living with you and their primary purpose of living with you has been to take care of you.
Absolutely, especially now when we need family caregivers more than ever, right? We've always needed family caregivers. Now we have a lot of paid caregivers, but there's a shortage. And so this is a really wise program to know about and consider if you are that family caregiver for 2 years, doing that and then being able to protect the house. And, you know, there's conversations about generational wealth and not being able to pass on the house because of some of the programs you might need. So thank you for sharing that. I had never heard of that. So that's great. So the Homestead Exemption Act. Got it. Okay. So let's talk about some other challenges. So again, I love that you said we get to, you know, work on these challenges. It's such a good focus, like, you know, being solution focused. So what are other challenges in your role?
I think some of the challenges is getting information from the consumers, getting it over to the county, and having it act upon quickly, because sometimes what we are needing is time sensitive. It could be affecting the consumer's services because the county has denied out their services for different reasons. It could be that they didn't complete their re-debt. It could be that they didn't follow through with what's called a Paris match. And so I just think some of the challenges are that is us being advocates for our consumers and making sure we get what they need done and getting response back. It could either be from the county, it could be from a case manager. I know here at CEO AAA, I work on the Molina team, but I also work with Molina. I call Molina because I have all the under 60s, and there's no waiver service coordinators here that do the under 60s. So I work with them a lot, and it's just really making sure that the consumer has what they need and also making them accountable for what they have to get us and not make it all fall back on us, but making them accountable. And now I think one of the biggest challenges is with address changes, that we can't let the county know about an address change. It's up to the consumer. And our biggest fear is consumers don't know how to use computers, some of them. I'm not saying all, but some. And or they don't have access to a computer. And so what we've been doing, and Shelby came up with a really good statement that we put into the case notes that allows us to put it in there to tell that we've informed the client that they have to be the ones to reach out. And then we put in what the new address is. So that way the county does have it if they have to go and look.
Okay. So because a lot of this is done via mail, that address is crucial because there's also a time requirement that comes along with getting everything in.
Right. They have 10 days from the day that they move to get this information into the county. And what happens is all the re-debt information or any paperwork from the county is mailed to that client at the address that is listed in the case. And if they don't update it, then it's going to go to the old number. And then what they'll do is they'll get return mail. And then at that time, sometimes they will close down their waivers.
Wow. Yes. Okay. After all that work getting qualified, and then you can just lose it like that.
Yeah.
Those are high stakes. So Shelby, talk to me about a typical referral that you get and kind of walk me through start to finish what that process is.
Okay, so how we get our referrals, they would come up from the assessment team. So when they come upstairs, they all go to Michelle, and then Michelle kind of trickles them down to who they belong to. And then so at that point, we would look at the case, and then we would send an email over to JFS, the county that they belong in, and then we would let them know that they got a level of care and they meet the level of care, and we need a Medicaid block added. So, and then we ask them, you know, does this person look like they will qualify for the waiver? If they're on SSI, it's pretty simple. More than likely, they're going to qualify to come right onto waiver. We're going to be able to go ahead and approve them. If they're like in a category needy category or some other type of category, sometimes the county will have to send request letters out to the consumer and ask for their resources, their income, and anything permanent to resources and assets. Because some categories, they don't need to verify any of their resources to be on a Medicaid, the Medicaid base category that they're on, because it doesn't apply to them or that program. So others, when they're coming onto a waiver, now they have to verify their resources because that is a qualification requirement. So once we get the information back from the county, we either know we can go ahead and approve them, get them started on waiver, and get their services out to the case manager to get those services rolling. If we have to wait on some like an answer back from county, we would just kind of note our, we all have Excel sheets, and we would just note the case, like first request went out and the due date. Then we would wait for that due date, and if we would have to go into the JFS system and look at their notes to see the status. We have to look at these statuses multiple times to see if they've been updated. We do not get an email from JFS when they're ready to enroll. So okay. We just have to keep on going in and viewing cases. usually I will email the county if I see that it was due on, say, the 15th, and it's now the 17th or 18th, and there's no notes. I will email, hey, status check, can we, I see the last due date was the 15th. And then usually I'll go in a few days later and see if there's a note, okay, seeing what the status check is, seeing if it's ready to enroll or if a second request was sent out. And that's pretty much what we do daily for our upcoming enrollments until we get them enrolled. I know for myself, with Aetna, on Mondays we do enrollments. So I would then contact corporate Aetna, let them know who I have on my list that's good to enroll, and then it comes back down, and then enrollment happens.
Okay. So we're getting our referrals from our assessment team because they've gone out and verified that the person is meeting the level of care. They have the needs that support that. And then you're getting the referral to verify the Medicaid eligibility piece. You don't have access to a database that just tells us that. So we have to coordinate with County Job and Family Services of the county that the... Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Okay.
We do have access to some of the systems.
Okay.
We do have access to the MITS system, which is the state billing system.
Okay.
We can see if they're on Medicaid. We can see what category they're on. But that doesn't tell us for sure that they're good for waiver. We also have access to the OB system, which is also the Ohio benefit system. And that's the system that JFS works in. We can read the notes in there and we can look at screens, but that doesn't tell you the whole picture all the time. So with the Medicaid background that we have, we can look at that and we can almost say this person's probably going to be eligible, but we can also look at it and say, this person's going to have to verify A, B, and C.
Okay.
Because of the knowledge that we have with the Medicaid. Okay. But county is the final say. If we can look and we can say, oh, this person's on Social Security SSI, they should be able to come right onto waiver because SSI qualifies you for Medicaid.
Okay.
However, if a worker at Jobs and Family Services decides that they need to send out a checklist and ask for verifications, that is always going to be what trumps. Okay. Because they make the final say. We do not make eligibility decisions for Medicaid. We just are kind of the in-between, the person who tries to keep that engine running behind the scene. That's how I explain it. Like, I'm the one behind the scene trying to keep that engine going down the track as smooth as possible so nobody on the floor needs to know anything. Sometimes we hit bumps and people know what's happening, and there's a lot of times where we're keeping that train going down the track and nobody even knows that there's any problems behind the scenes.
Okay.
So that's how I kind of explain my job, because it can be really bumpy and hopefully we don't let people know how bumpy it is.
That's great.
So
yeah. Michelle, what are you looking for? And then what's triggering this thought around, oh, there might be some follow-up, some checklist verifications?
Right. So when we look in the case, I always go to MITS first, like Shelby does, and to kind of see what kind of categories are open. I also look to see if they have Medicare.
Okay.
Because sometimes they won't have Medicare, but they've come across on the HINS list as needing a new ICDS assessment. And then you're like, whoa. So then what we do as an OB is we look at their resources. Like, we go down and see what bank accounts do they have. Do they have life insurance policies? What's their income? And that way we're able to say, okay, yes, this person's going to have a liability. Oh, this person has a life insurance policy. They're going to have to verify that life insurance policy. Also, we look at who is all in, you know, making sure that the case is all up to date with the addresses and everything, and just really just verifying their income, their resources, and making sure that we can kind of give the case managers an idea of what is going to be needed. Now, with Melina, I get enrollments every day.
Okay.
So mine's totally different. I get enrollments from Melina every single day. So as soon as I get a case, if the county has 2 days to get back with us to let us know if it's a good case to go ahead and enroll or if there's going to be verifications needed. So every day we are checking the cases. And I found for me, it's easy. I CC myself on every email. Hmm. And it goes into a special folder. So the next day, I start at the bottom and I work my way up. And that's how I'm able to track what the county needs or doesn't need. And if I don't get anything back, I have an email I send out because Melina just enrolls. They don't ask me, are they good to go or not? They just send out an enrollment date. So I have to get an email out immediately. It says, do not start services. We have no information on the case yet. So mine's a little bit more tedious that way. But yeah, it's mainly looking at the resources like the bank statements, you know, because we can see if they have a bank statement or don't have a bank statement. And if they don't have a banking account listed, then we automatically know that the county is going to be requesting, where does that Social Security check get deposited to?
Okay. So you're looking for either quick ability to see that someone's qualified, or you're looking for the bumps, like Shelby described, mm-hmm. and ways to smooth those out so that, okay, there's going to be these different challenges. We know we're going to reach out, help here, so that this process is smooth and so someone can be determined eligible. So this is a huge resource that we provide that generally goes unnoticed and unknown, which is the point of it, right? Because we just want to make sure that those that need our help can get it. Do other area agencies on aging have roles like this?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But their roles are a lot different. They are, like, we're all encompassed. We do everything from the start of the case until we end up disenrolling them. We do everything in between. At the other area on agings, they split up and like they'll have one person that just does the new enrollments. They have another person that just does the disenrollments. They have another person that just does liability changes.
Interesting.
So they don't like, we are all encompassed. So we know everything there is to know about those cases. Where in the other areas, they only do one part of it. So they don't know what's happening at the beginning versus what's going to happen at the end.
Okay. So just kind of a different way of doing it and kind of making
right.
experts in the different areas, whereas we're kind of our approach is more holistic in the
yes.
whole process.
And I think it's a lot better because then that way we know, oh, okay, I've had this person before, you know, and they had troubles last year with their redact because we've had case notes in the system. So we're able to say, this person's going to do this. And we also get a spreadsheet, which is really nice, is with updated when the redebts are due. And so we try really hard to keep PIMS updated so that way our case managers can look and say, oh, the redebt's coming up. I better remind them that they need that. Or they'll email us and say, I see there's an old date in here, because we only update those when we touch that case, and we don't get to touch every case every day.
Okay.
So they bring it to our attention. We're able to look it up and say, okay, I've changed the date. This is when it's due.
What is a redebt? Is that different than a liability?
Yeah. A redetermination is the county has to redetermine Medicaid eligibility every year.
Okay.
And what happens is the state mails out 3 months prior to the redetermination a packet. And the member needs to fill out the packet. It's the renewal application. And the main important is they have to sign page 9. That is the most important page ever to sign. Even if they don't fill out any of the other information, if they sign page 9, that's the important part. And then what they have to do is send that back into the county. The county will download that application. And then that's what triggers a letter to go out with what verifications are needed.
Sign page 9.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the most important.
If nothing else.
Yes.
You guys
yes.
need t-shirts that say that. Is page 9 in the initial packet as well, or just the redetermination?
I don't know. and the original application that they'd fill out when they first come on and have no Medicaid.
It's a different packet.
It's a different packet. And there's like 12 or 14 pages to that one.
Okay. Yeah. We don't have enough like time or ability for me to follow up on all of these terms that I wrote down, but the complicated nature of the systems that you use, at some point you talked about a Paris match. There's just so many nuances and potential challenges that you
That's Medicaid to navigate. Okay. That is Medicaid. Medicaid is very, very hard.
Okay.
It's not consumer friendly. It's the whole system is based on federal regulations and government.
Okay.
And it is very hard for our consumers, especially the population we work with, to understand the ins and outs of it. And I think that's why our positions are so important, because I will get on phones with a case manager and talk to the consumer, and because they don't want to turn in their personal information and they don't understand why they have to. So I will get on the phone and I'll be like, I'm a Medicaid specialist. I worked for JFS for 14 years. This is why you need to do it. If you want your services, you need to complete. If you've handed it in already and they're asking for it again, give it to them again.
Okay.
Because if you want your services, which we want them to keep their services, the reason they're on this program is because they qualify for the services, and those services are very important to the community for them to have.
Right.
But if they don't have the Medicaid, then they don't have the services.
Hmm.
Without Medicaid, the waiver program doesn't exist. So it's... They intermingle.
Yeah.
Because to be on this program, you must have your Medicaid eligibility. And without it, then your services are put on hold, and then you don't get those services.
Whether that's your initial or your redetermination.
Correct.
Wow.
So it's very hard for our consumers to understand all of this.
Well, I would, yeah, I'm confused. I mean, I feel like I know a little bit more, but it's a lot. And, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of scams. And so you, on one hand, we're training people to be smart about what they're sending and sharing. And then on the other hand, we're getting information on their bank statements and their life insurance. And so I can understand sort of where that unease would come from, right? And in having to share all of these documents.
And the scams are daily.
Yes.
We have tons of case managers saying, hey, I have a consumer that said, if they don't sign this paper, that their Medicaid's going to close.
Oh,
and I'm like, wait, let me go in, look through the case, because we can see the Medicaid case. We can see if a document went out. I will tell them that is not correct.
Hmm.
Somebody is playing with this person, and they need to not take any phone calls. And if they really need to know what's going on, they need to go to JFS. They need to go to Jobs and Family Services. I believe that this is a scam.
Huh.
And especially, and that's with Medicaid and Medicare. It's happening, especially during open enrollment time.
Right.
It happens, and people are giving their personal information out, because you're going to have to give your social out, your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And no, that's definitely a scam if somebody's calling you and wanting all that information. JFS is never going to ask you what your social is.
Okay.
They already know it.
Oh.
If you're in their system, they already know it.
Good point.
If you're a brand new person, you're going to have to give that all to them. So they're never going to like just be calling you asking for your information like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to either be doing a mail-in, or you're going to do a face-to-face. They're never just going to call you and be like, well, what's your social? What's your birthday?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
They've already got that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about our take on how to be a Medicaid specialist in the holistic nature, you are working on the initial eligibility and getting people through that process as smooth as possible. You're helping and tracking in their redeterminations to make sure they're not losing services. Your checks and balances system in terms of scams or something like that. So I can see why having you all do the entire case is good because you're essentially setting your future self up for success because you know you're going to document the things that are needed when redetermination comes, or you know that, you know, your future self is going to be able to read and know what you mean and whatever. So it makes sense to me to do that holistic process instead of different pieces of it.
I agree because our spreadsheets really help a lot.
I bet. Your spreadsheets, and then I sat with you when I first started, and you have all of those templates too, the email templates.
Yes.
Are those like the best? Shelby's getting a high five over there, giving her a high five. So those sheets are the best, I'm sure.
When I started, Michelle, I mean, I came in with massive Medicaid experience, obviously, but I did not know the COAAA side of things. Mm-hmm. And her training to me was so amazing. It's ABC. 1, 2, 3, and that's how I work. So like her templates and her Excel sheets and just how she documents stuff came in here, and I was like, yes, I can roll with this because it's easy. Everybody who reads it can understand it, and it was a very easy transition from JFS to COAAA for me.
Okay, good,
because she made those templates so easy and she had it all in place.
Yeah.
And it was just, so I really like to keep that in place and keep it rolling.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure that you also, from your JFS perspective, add a lot of the whole picture for us to understand too. And even hearing you talk about when you talk to clients, like this is why it's important. These are the repercussions. So having kind of both sides of the same coin are really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? I think so, because it really helped having, now we have two Medicaid specialists that came from JFS that are now us.
Oh, okay.
And
who's the other one?
Michael.
Oh, Michael and Aetna. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, and they're both on Aetna's team. So,
Holly Smith also.
Yeah. Okay. Down in assessment.
Okay.
From JFS.
And do you all get together and meet, or we're going to kind of start some of that to?
I'm hoping that we get together to start. They just started back up with meetings.
Good.
And that's really nice because then we get to brainstorm and kind of, you know, if someone's doing something different and someone else can say, oh, my gosh, that would work with what I'm doing, that's really helpful. And also sharing information, I think I'm a big one. If I learn something new, I'm sharing it with the whole team.
Great. Yeah.
So, but I, you know, that's something I feel that's very important. Is like, if you don't share the information, how's someone else going to know?
Yeah. And it's really, again, all about just smoothing out those bumps and making sure people are getting what they need. And so if you find a little key that unlocks some other challenge, that's great.
Yes.
Clearly, I loved your bumps analogy because it's really working for me. Yes. And I keep saying it. So
well, I learned that when I was a social worker with juveniles, and our building was beside the train tracks. Okay. So that kind of started me with that analogy, and it's always stuck.
Yeah.
So because the train would come by and we would be having, and then so it kind of was like, got to keep the train going down the tracks. Mm-hmm. And it's always been my thing because that's how I feel. Like we are the engine that's keeping things moving. Yeah. So that's just where that analogy came from.
Yeah. What I like is that the consumers don't know what we have to go through to get them to that final step, which is important because that shouldn't be their problem.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing service. Much. Yeah.
Yeah. About how many referrals are you getting on a weekly basis?
Probably, I would say around 20.
Okay. Shelby?
I would say between Michael and I, they go to you first. I would say probably around the same.
Yeah. Okay. We get about 40 a week. So
total?
That come to me.
Okay.
And then I look them up.
You assign them out.
Yeah, because I look them up to see who's with Melina and who's with Aetna. And Aetna is divided out by alphabet. So Michael has the first part. Shelby has the second part.
Okay.
So I can just forward. But what I do before I send it to them is I go into PIMS and I update the whole demographic page for them.
Oh, nice. So that part's already done.
That part's already done. And then they get to take it from there for their parts.
Okay. I love all of the systems and the processes and the innovations and the rethinking things that are constantly going on across the agency. It's just so cool to see how people are so committed to just continually making things more efficient, more effective, better for the consumer, all of that.
I think thinking outside the box kind of helps too, because that's my kind of thinking.
Yeah.
So it just, and I'm all into spreadsheets, and I've created every single one that we've used, and they're just very helpful.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm a out of the box thinker too, because like when I hit the floor, I was like, just to the supervisors in my department, I was like, we're putting a lot more work on the case managers. And like, we have to figure out how to kind of take some more off of their plate.
Okay.
Because they were expected to do a lot with the renewals and the redets. And it was like, they already have huge caseloads. So let's try to simplify more of this and try to make it where we can encourage our consumers to do most of it on their own.
Okay.
And a lot of it on their own, because they're the ones getting all the paperwork. Or let's try to get more consumers have authorized reps that they designate to help them. Because mm-hmm. When somebody gets shut down, if we're expecting our case managers to then do all that running around trying to get everything together for their Medicaid to get back into order, then we're taking away what they already have on their plate and we're adding more to their plate.
Yes.
So like, I know I'm in the process helping one of the supervisors come up with different templates so they can follow those and make it a little bit smoother.
Okay.
So like, we're always trying to innovate and, you know, update and do those things.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine rules and processes and whatever changes too. And so whether it's an efficiency thing or just having to reimagine something, it's, you know, always ongoing. Let's get into the miracle question. So tell me, what is one thing you would change or add about COAAA?
I think if I had one thing to add, it would be that I would hope that we could all work more as a team.
Okay.
In our divisions instead of working separately. I wish that we could come together and just come up with ideas and be able to be open and honest and talk, and nobody's going to take it, you know, for granted what someone's saying or not putting them down, but just to kind of be more of a, have that team atmosphere.
Okay. So you're talking cross-agency.
Yes.
Just opportunities to come together and have discussions on certain topics.
Right. And it'd be nice to kind of cross-train everybody, okay, too. That was one of my big things is I like doing training. So, but is have everybody, like right now, I'm the only one that knows Passport and MyCare.
Okay.
Because when I was hired 24 years ago, I did Passport and traditional AL, and then I went into MyCare. Well, everybody else that has come in, like the two Passport Medicaid specialists, they only know Passport. And Shelby and Michael know the MyCare part, but not the Passport part. So I just think it'd be really important if we could just start cross-training all the Medicaid specialists so we would be able to help out in all the different areas.
That's a great idea. And Shelby, I saw you nodding.
Yeah, I am a big pusher on the cross-training.
Okay.
Because the situation happened that Michelle was out. My co-partner was out on vacation. There was a Passport person on vacation.
Oh, dear.
So I was taking care of my care, Melina and Aetna. And the one Passport person that was here was in a car accident. And I could not jump in and help Passport as much as I wish I could have, because I do not know how they do their enrollments or anything.
Okay.
I could give them information about the case, but I couldn't jump in and do anything. Michelle's cases, I could jump in because I've kind of learned how she communicates with corporate Melina, et cetera, and how she does her cases. So I could just jump in and do them. I think it's crucial that we get some cross training.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we do have two MASSAs or Medicaid specialists in assessment. And they do the initial stuff, and not the ongoing stuff, but even to be cross-trained so that if they were out or something happens, because you never know when there's going to be a family medical emergency, a death, you go out here and get in a car accident.
Win the lottery. Nobody's coming back for that after that.
So if one of us leaves, nobody else knows how to step in and take, and there's not, I wish we had a supervisor that could be over all of us as a whole, that knew Medicaid, that knew how to work the systems, that had eligibility to get into the systems that we work in, because not everybody even has access to them.
Interesting.
That knows how to communicate with the JFS and actually approve cases, deny cases, be able to look at cases and kind of know like, oh, this is what needs to happen. Because we have wonderful supervisors, but they do not know what we do. Mm-hmm. And they do not know. They could never go
they
to her desk.
Step in.
No. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just the cross-training and also possibly that, I think that would be very, very important.
It's really interesting. And especially after sitting through and kind of learning all of this, if we don't have a cross-training and we don't have a full backup system, the train stops, right?
If the
train stops, then the consumers don't get what they need.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. And it's going to be a lot harder for the stuff to get finished for them because they're going to have to go to JFS and they're going to have to sit in those lobbies for hours. They're going to be on the phone and never get a response for hours. Mm-hmm. And that's our biggest thing. Well, I was on the phone for 6 hours.
Gosh.
Or I went to JFS and I sat in the lobby for 3 hours and still never got things resolved. Well, I sent the stuff in 3 times already. That's where we come in and we can kind of push the stuff through.
Yeah.
Because we have people that we can just push it to at JFS.
You have the connections, you have the knowledge, you have the databases, you have all those things that a consumer wouldn't necessarily have.
No. Correct. And sometimes their goal to, like, say, in Franklin County, there's so many different centers. Their goal to the North Center, but the long-term care center is the West Center. They have to go to the West Center if they want to talk to somebody in the long-term care unit, which is the unit they want to talk to.
Okay.
So there's just all those little details, but what really hit me was when everybody was out and all of a sudden that next person went out and I was the only person here to help Melina, Aetna, and Passport. And I'm like, I don't know how to work all their systems.
It showcased a flaw in our system. We have a lot of subject matter experts, but if you're not cross-trained, then things can kind of go down. Any final thoughts that you want to make sure listeners know about your role, Medicaid itself, Medicaid specialist?
I think if you have questions, please ask. Don't think that any question is not a question that should be asked. Call in, ask us, and we can try and answer it the best we can. And I have the theory, if I don't know the answer, I'm going to find the answer, and then I'll get back with you.
That's awesome. I love that. Shelby?
I will roll off Michelle because I am really that person. I'm a service person. So we're here to help you and serve you as our customers, as our consumers. And we just want things to go as smooth for you because you're the ones that need the benefit. So that's what I feel like my job is here. And I miss the one-on-one with consumers, but I feel like I'm still doing a very important job.
Absolutely. Your impact is there, and it's such a servant leadership way of doing something because, again, there's really no accolades coming out of this. It's just making sure that people get what they need to get, and that is just something to be so proud of. So thank you both so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
I hope now you know something about Medicaid.